This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Hello and welcome to the program. North Korean leader Kim Jong-il died on December 17, 2011. But it was not until December 19th that the North Koreans reported it to the world. On today's program, Keith will be telling us about what has been happening since the death of Kim and what media is like in the reclusive state. Dan Hensley will also be here for next week's propagation forecast. Media Network Plus, still in recovery mode from a big holiday hangover. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Sri Lanka signed an agreement with China to construct a 350-meter tower in its capital, Colombo. Telecommunications Regulatory Commission Director General Anisha Pelpita said the tower will make an impact on Sri Lanka's communication and information technology sectors. The multi-facade tower will have allocations for 50 television service providers, 50 broadcasting service providers, and 10 telecommunications providers. The Lotus Tower building and the Leisure Garden will be the tallest building in South Asia and the 19th tallest building in the world. An area of 3.03 hectares was earmarked for the project, and the Sri Lankan cabinet recently approved the construction of the tower. The 11-story structure will have a revolving restaurant on the fourth floor. The Lotus Flower segment that will have seven floors will be erected from the fifth floor. A reception hall with a capacity for 1,000 people will be housed on the third floor. The construction of the Lotus Tower building in Colombo is to be completed in 30 months at a cost of $100 million, which is funded by the Exim Bank of China. The BBC Trust has approved plans to run advertising on a number of BBC World Service websites, as well as in radio broadcasts for the first time in the corporation's history. The BBC World Service has been given the green light to run ads on the Arabic, Russian, and Spanish websites, which the Trust says will put it on par with the BBC's international-facing website, BBC.com. The BBC World Service has seen its budget slashed by £46 million a year, resulting in more than 600 job losses, and has been asked by the government to generate £3 million from commercial activities by 2013 and 2014. Taiwan is to cut Korean TV drama shows on local TV stations to encourage the development of homegrown programs. The country's National Broadcast Regulatory announced that Gala Television, Taiwan's TV channel dedicated to airing soap operas, will reduce the amount of Korean drama shows starting in June this year, upon the request of the National Communications Commission. Upon its requirement, the channel is obligated to broadcast domestic content for at least 1 hour between 6 p.m. and midnight on weeknights. It should also increase the number of non-Korean drama shows from at least 1 hour to 2 hours. This particular channel is the first Taiwanese channel to comply with such an order. The NCC also said the overall percentage of local programs broadcast by the station must be at least 20%. Chinese TV networks are trying to adapt a new advertising ban that came into effect on January 1st. The new rule, which demands TV stations stop screening ads in the middle of drama programs running 45 minutes or more, was announced by the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television on the 28th of November. Audiences complained that too many ads made it seem that the TV shows were interrupting the ads. But while viewers can now enjoy their favorite programs without any ads, some viewers have started complaining that the ad breaks between the shows are too long, as many stations are running ad blocks between programs. The time for ads before and after the program is as long as the show itself, said Liu Chun, the vice president of Sohu.com, one of China's largest internet portholes. He wrote on his Sina microblog last week saying that he watched 20 minutes of ads before a drama that aired on Zhejiang television. And that was a look at some of the headlines of media developments around the world. If you wish to find out more developments from the world of media, you can check out the Media Network blog from Andy Sennett from Radio Netherlands Worldwide. Just go to www.pcjmedia.com and you'll find a link for them on our homepage.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, heard around the world on satellite, shortwave, online, and on great partner stations in over 22 countries. Many people around the world were surprised on December 19th when the Korean Central News Agency announced the death of Kim Jong-il. He'd been ill for some time after suffering a stroke in 2008. What surprised many North Korea watchers was the quick response from the DPRK just 2 days after his death in transit on his personal train. But experts have said this could be false information. Satellite pictures taken over Pyongyang show that at the time of his death, his train was not even moving. It was stationary in the capital. Keith has been to the DPRK and has been paying close attention to media from the North. He joins us now. When was the announcement of the death of Kim Jong-il, and how was it done? And was it different from when his father, Kim Il-sung, died?
Well, the announcement itself happened on December the 19th at just after 3 hours GMT, or around that time. Kim Jong-il himself died on the 17th, and it took them a couple of days to probably come out with the official party line, that's the Workers' Party of North Korea, to decide what they are going to say. When I heard the announcement, I was just in the process of listening to the news on Radio Australia, and partway through the bulletin, you can hear some paper being handed to the announcer, and the announcer just said, we have unconfirmed reports that Kim Jong-il has died. We'll have more later on in the program. And that was it. When I heard that, I went to the website for CNN and BBC, and they still hadn't put it up yet. It was only until about 20 minutes later. The difference, I think, between the death of Kim Jong-il and his father, Kim Il-sung, in 1994 is really not that much. I think the only big difference was the time delay. Now, in 1994, I remember it very well because I was in Cuba. We received a notice that came over the wire services that Kim Il-sung had died. But when you look closely to it, there was almost a five-day delay from when he actually died to when they actually made the announcement. That was probably the major difference.
Central Committee of the Workers' Party of Korea, the Central Military Commission of the Party, and the National Defense Commission, the Presidium of the Supreme People's Assembly, and the Cabinet of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, inform you with deepest grief that the great leader Kim Jong-il, General Secretary of the Workers' Party of Korea, Chairman of the National Defense Commission of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea and Supreme Commander of the Korean People's Army, passed away from a sudden attack of illness on the road of field guidance at 8 hours 40 minutes on December 17th, 2011.
Why do you think that they were able to do it sooner with Kim Jong-il?
Well, North Korea, as you know, has been in the spotlight quite a bit over the past 2 years. The first thing, of course, is when he named his youngest son, Kim Jong-un, who's estimated 28 or 29 years old, nobody knows for sure, as his successor. He's had some major health problems. There's the ongoing six-party talks over North Korea's nuclear program. There was the shelling of an island that belongs to South Korea. So I think what they wanted to do, because North Korea had been in the news so much, was to try to get this information out as soon as possible. And they did it. And they did it.
So it was just 2 days then that before they announced that the son of Kim Jong-il, that being Kim Jong-un, was the leader.
Yes, but you know, if you speak to a lot of, say, North Korea watchers, even though the announcement was made on the 19th and they said that he died on the 17th, people are speculating, well, you know, knowing North Korea than what it is and how they handle the process, they said it wouldn't be surprising if he had actually been dead for quite some time, but they just decided to choose that date to make the announcement. Nobody knows for sure, and I don't think that we will ever know for sure, but the speculation is there.
What is the new leader's title?
Ah, the titles. Yes, they love the titles. Kim Il-sung, the father and the founder of the DPRK. He is known as the Dear Leader, and he's also the Eternal President. Mm. His son, Kim Jong-il, was called the Great Leader and then the Supreme Leader. So he had two titles. His son, Kim Jong-un, is now known as the Supreme Commanding Leader of the DPRK.
I wonder how long before they start recycling.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was North Korean television showing?
On the day of the announcement, when the Central Broadcasting System in North Korea announced it on television, an announcer went on the air to read an official statement from the Korean Central News Agency. And all information that exits North Korea about North Korea goes through the same agency. It doesn't matter in what language it is. It's a carbon copy translation, so it's word per word. And what they showed is this woman announcing the death, announcing that, you know, when this happened, the sky changed color, and she was being very emotional on air. After the announcement was made, they went to play some revolutionary music, and then for about 24 to 48 hours, they were playing and showing video of people and their reaction of the crying in the street. Now, you know, when we hear about leaders around the world and news organizations, let's say, if a leader in the West dies, they'll say, you know, a lot of people were emotional and crying in the street. But this is nothing to what the North Koreans were showing. And I have a little excerpt right now to give you a sort of an audio illustration of what it was like. And there we heard, Paulette, you know, the outpouring of emotion that was taking place in North Korea with the death of Kim Jong-il. A lot of experts that I spoke to when this was going on said, you know, a lot of it is genuine, but at the same time, you need to take everything, as the old saying goes, with a grain of salt. a number of North Korea watchers, including Mike Shinoy, who worked as a CNN correspondent for more than 20 years, who's an expert on North Korea. He's now working as a professor, and they actually analyzed video that was coming out on satellite from North Korea, analyzing it frame per frame per frame. And they realized, you know, yes, a lot of it was genuine, but there was also a lot that was directed and made to seem cinematic, because when they analyzed the video, in each shot of the video, they can see reflections of what was going on behind the camera. And all the emotions were in front of the camera, but behind the camera, it looked like people were just talking. And then as the camera panned, all of a sudden people's emotions changed.
Now, this sounds to people in the West, this sounds very reminiscent of what we perceive to be propaganda in China, Cuba, the former USSR, and other states, former Eastern Bloc states. How is, now in conversations we had before, you said that North Korea is like that, but different. How?
Very different indeed. If you look at Chinese media from the Cultural Revolution, yes, of course, there was a lot of propaganda. If you look at media in the Soviet Union, especially during the height of the Cold War, yes, there was a lot of propaganda. You went to Ukraine in 1984. You remember what it was like in Ukraine in 1984, mm-hmm. and Cuba as well. But very, very different. Different in the sense that in the Soviet Union, a lot of people that saw the propaganda either on television or in the cinemas knew that this was propaganda and nothing but rubbish. Mm-hmm. They knew it. Mm-hmm. You know, in China as well, I remember speaking to a colleague of mine that I worked with at China Radio International. We were covering this tourism convention together in Beijing, and North Korea had a stand, and they were showing videos from North Korea, and he said, you know, when he sees this stuff today happening in North Korea, he says it makes China look like a democratic country in the 1960s and 70s. Wow. That is the huge difference. If you compare it to Soviet propaganda in the 60s and 70s, it makes the Soviet Union seem like a democratic state, which it wasn't, but it makes it seem like it. That's how different it is.
Now, the Voice of Korea is the DPRK's international service. What is the difference between them and other shortwave services?
Well, other international broadcasters are extremely different. Even Radio Havana, Cuba, even the Voice of Vietnam, even China Radio International cannot compare to Voice of Korea. Voice of Korea is not just the voice of the government, but it's also the voice of who's ever in power. It was the voice of Kim Il-sung. It was the voice of Kim Jong-il. It's now the voice of Kim Jong-un. And basically what they call news is 20 minutes of what the leader did that day. Everything from congratulatory messages from these communist parties, like, for example, on the 20th of December, they read a message from the Communist Party of Canada with their deep condolences for the dear leader. They also had which was an odd one. It was from the Communist Party of New Zealand, which has approximately 5 members. And they read this statement for 5 minutes from the Communist Party of New Zealand, which has 5 members, saying they were showing their condolences to the Korean people for the passing of Kim Jong-il. So this is what their news is. And it doesn't matter, even if it's during their cultural segment, there is going to be something about, quote-unquote, the dear leader. If it's going to be about sports, there's going to be something about the dear leader. There's a funny clip that I have from a few years ago. It was from 2008, and it was about the North Korean Olympic team getting ready to go to Beijing for the 2008 Games. And in the sportscast, they actually said, and I quote, the great leader Kim Jong-il is a championship Olympic swimmer, but is unable to partake in the 2008 Games because of his serious duties at home at fighting Yankee imperialists.
Oh my goodness. Now, people in China and the former Soviet Union all were able to recognize the farcical nature of this propaganda. Do the North Korean people see through it too? Or do they actually believe it?
You know, that's a very difficult question. Unfortunately, and this is the sad thing, sadly, North Korea is so cut off from the rest of the world, unlike the Soviet Union and unlike China during the 60s and 70s. It is incredibly cut off. And there's generations of people, the only thing they know is Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il. They don't know anything else. And from an early age, this is what they're taught. Now, there of course are people that know this is, you know, nonsense. And you hear that from defectors that managed to get out of North Korea. They say, you know, there's actually a group of us in North Korea that know this is nonsense. But they'll say at the same time, there are people who really believe the stuff put out by the Korean Central News Agency and the Workers' Party.
Well, I think that was the case as well in former communist states. There is always an element of people that do actually believe it. Do the people in the DPRK have access to other foreign media, to the internet and Voice of America, BBC, World Service, and others?
Well, in the last few years, internet cafes have started popping up in Pyongyang. The difference is, okay, we call it the internet. We could connect to any website anywhere in the world, even to websites out of North Korea. In the DPRK, it's called internal net, which is a rough translation from Korea, from Korean. And basically, the internet in the North Korea only accesses North Korean websites. Only accesses North Korean websites. So people who do go to these internet cafes, and they're not cheap, they're very expensive, can only access something like 20 or 30 different websites, and they're all government propaganda websites or company websites that also have government propaganda.
So for the North Koreans who do find out what's going on in the rest of the world via foreign media, how do they do it?
Well, they do it by a very old technology, which is shortwave radio. In North Korea itself, unlike other countries, radio sets sold in North Korea are pre-tuned to government stations, and you also need to register the radio at the police station. In apartment buildings, they have radio and television fed in by cable, and the radio that's fed into apartment complexes in Pyongyang, you can't turn off. You can turn the volume down, but you can't turn it off. There are a number of North Koreans now that have been able to access shortwave radios. A number of groups in South Korea, what they will do is they will send these balloons facing North Korea that will contain a shortwave radio, some U.S. dollars, and information about South Korea and the rest of the world, including DVDs and everything. So they access them that way. The other way is by buying a shortwave radio on the black market that's smuggled in from China.
So is that what the U.S. dollars are for in the balloons?
The U.S. dollars is probably to, I think, more than anything, buy food on the black market. Because as we know, North Korea has been going through an extreme famine since the mid 1990s.
So there is a black market that's thriving in North Korea.
There is a black market that's thriving in North Korea. Radios are a very hot commodity, especially the ones that are smuggled across the border from China into North Korea. The prices are completely outrageous. From defectors that spoke about this, said that, let's say a shortwave radio in China would cost you maybe, say, 20 or 30 U.S. dollars. In North Korea, the same radio will cost you nearly 200.
Oh, wow.
And defectors have said, people will do anything to try to raise the money to bribe officials to get these radios across so they have access to information. It was recently discussed among some international broadcasters that target North Korea, saying, how many people listen? The reality, of course, is we don't know. Nobody knows. And it was pretty much the same thing with the Soviet Union. The Voice of America for years had no idea how many people listened to the Voice of America and Radio Liberty in the Soviet Union. It wasn't until the collapse of the Soviet Union when they found out that their audience was in the millions. It was just in the millions. So North Korea is also in a similar kind of way. Now, the North Koreans do try to jam broadcasts from the Voice of America, BBC, Radio Free Asia, the South Korean freedom stations that target the North. But because of the fuel shortages that are in the DPRK, the jamming is not always effective. It is not always effective. There could be maybe 2 or 3 days of jamming, but then maybe after that, there's no more power at the jamming facility, so then there's no more jamming going on. And the jamming that the North Koreans are doing is not as efficient as, let's say, some other countries like China. The North Koreans are not very efficient at it. So the jamming can be heard outside of North Korea, but probably in North Korea itself. But like I said, we don't know for sure. It's probably not effective at all.
If you want more information on how to tune in to Voice of Korea and to get their full schedule, you'll find it listed at www.pcjmedia.com. You'll see a link in the latest news on the right-hand side of the page. Now, if you want to tune in to Voice of Korea or any other shortwave program, propagation is important. Here's Dan Hensley with more on what we can expect over the next 7 days.
Here is propagation from January 7th to January 13th, 2012. The A index will be 5 all week long. The KP index will be 2 all week long. The 10.7 centimeter flux is going to jump around a little bit. On January 7th, 135 for the 10.7 centimeter flux. On January 8th and 9th, it'll be 130. On January 10th through January 12th, it will be 125. On January 13th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 135. 5 sunspot groups are in view this second week of January. They are 1386, 88, 89, 90, and 91. All sunspots are said to be magnetically simple and quiet. The Earth-facing side of the Sun has no large coronal holes at this time. The 10.7 centimeter flux, KP index, and quiet conditions should provide reasonably nice HF and SSB conditions.
Thanks, Dan. Well, that about wraps up this week's edition of Media Network Plus. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please write to us at any time. Our address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, MNP standing for, of course, Media Network Plus. mnp@pcjmedia.com. Or log on to www.pcjmedia.com and click on Media Network Plus to listen to this program again or to a past edition of the show. Thanks for tuning in to our first show of 2012. I hope your new year is off to a roaring good start, and do join us again a week from now. On behalf of Keith Pennell and Dan Hensley, this is Paulette Macquarie in Vancouver, Canada, saying so long and 73s to you all.